Have you ever felt like the ground beneath your feet was dissolving? Perhaps the spiritual practices that once brought comfort now feel hollow. Maybe the beliefs that anchored your identity suddenly seem like empty words. Or the relationships you thought defined you have inexplicably shifted. This isn't failure. It's the beginning of something far more profound than most of us recognize. What if the very moments when we feel most lost are actually when we're being found? This paradox lies at the heart of a spiritual process that has quietly shaped countless lives across centuries, yet remains widely misunderstood. It's not reserved for saints or mystics in monasteries. It happens to the executive questioning her purpose, the parent watching children leave home, the believer whose certainties have crumbled. This sacred unraveling, called the dark night of the soul, isn't about suffering for suffering's sake. It's about liberation from the invisible chains we didn't even know were binding us. Think of the dark night as spiritual surgery performed without anesthesia you can feel. It's the process of being freed from attachments and compulsions so subtle you never notice them controlling your life. The term dark doesn't mean evil or sinister. It means mysterious, working beneath conscious awareness where your ego can't interfere and sabotage the transformation. This happens to everyone in varying degrees throughout life, not just during catastrophic events. It might look like suddenly questioning a career you've built for decades, feeling inexplicably distant from a long-held faith, or recognizing that the person you thought you were doesn't quite fit anymore. Here's the catch. The darkness protects the process from your interference. If you could see exactly what you were being asked to relinquish, your need for control, your carefully constructed identity, your secret pride in being spiritual, you'd resist with everything you have. It's like trying to perform surgery on yourself while watching in a mirror. Your defenses would make the necessary cuts impossible. The obscurity isn't punishment, it's mercy. While worldly wisdom says light helps us avoid stumbling, spiritual wisdom reveals that our own certainty makes us stumble. The academic must surrender intellectual superiority to find genuine wisdom. The perpetual helper must acknowledge their own neediness to truly serve. The devoted seeker must release their cherished image of God to encounter the real thing. Dark nights aren't always painful. Some experience liberation as pure joy, like the perfectionist who suddenly felt free just to be, without constant self-criticism. All liberation involves loss and relinquishment, whether wrapped in pain or pleasure. This isn't a temporary crisis, it's the ongoing rhythm of spiritual life itself. The darkness isn't an obstacle blocking the path, it is the path, gradually revealing a union that has always existed but remained unrecognized. The concept emerged from 16th century Spain during the Convivencia, when Jews, Christians, and Muslims lived in remarkable harmony. Teresa of Avila, born into wealth with Jewish ancestry, entered convent school after her mother's death at 12. Despite her father's opposition, she felt called to religious life. A severe illness left her paralyzed for 3 years until a miraculous recovery at 27. She lacked formal theological training, but possessed profound spiritual experience. John of the Cross was born into poverty the same year as Teresa's recovery. After his father and brother died, John's brilliance emerged in a church orphanage. Despite conventional opportunities, he joined the Carmelites in 1563, craving contemplative depth. Teresa called him Mi Senequita, my little Seneca, teasing his small stature while acknowledging his philosophical depth. She had prayed for at least one friar to help reform the Carmelite order, and John became the answer. Their partnership was electric. She brought lived wisdom and practical insight. He brought theological precision and poetic genius. Together, they articulated something experienced but never so clearly expressed. Union with God isn't something to achieve, but something to recognize. And the painful process of stripping away illusions is itself divine love at work. Here's their radical claim. You're already united with God, not metaphorically, not potentially, actually united, right now. This union isn't earned through spiritual practices. It's your fundamental nature, as essential as your heartbeat. The spiritual journey isn't about getting closer to something distant. It's about becoming conscious of what has already been true. As Teresa heard in prayer, "Seek yourself in me, and in yourself seek me." Most of us experience separation where unity actually exists. Why? Recognizing this union requires sacrificing our self-image as separate and in control, a terrifying prospect for the ego. John compares the soul to a stone already united with the ground, yet capable of sinking deeper toward its deepest center, drawn by love rather than gravity. Teresa envisions the soul as a castle with seven inner mansions, God dwelling at the center while simultaneously permeating everything. The spiritual journey moves consciousness inward from the sensory realm toward the center, with prayer as the pathway. Every human capacity is fundamentally an appetite for God. Your senses seek divine beauty, your mind seeks divine truth, your will seeks divine goodness. Yet your faculties are too limited to grasp up their seeking. God is simultaneously too close and too vast to be captured, creating what John calls the wound of love, a soul yearning for what it cannot directly perceive. Most people remain unconsciously driven by this desire, pursuing it in all the wrong places. We chase pleasure and avoid pain, becoming attached to things that merely reflect divine qualities, beauty, truth, goodness, love, without recognizing their shadows of their creator. These attachments gradually transform into compulsions that rob us of freedom. We cling desperately to relationships, achievements, possessions, and beliefs, not from genuine love, but from terror of losing them. These attachments become idolatries, the workaholic insisting they're just being responsible, the spiritually proud person blind to their superiority complex, the relationship-dependent person calling their neediness love. Eventually, cracks appear in this carefully constructed denial. Major life transitions, losses, or periods of questioning reveal glimpses of deeper spiritual longing beneath our pursuits. The dark night liberates desire by systematically diminishing attachment, creating space for authentic relationship with the divine and others, free from the distortions of need and fear. These changes in daily life simultaneously transform prayer experience. Christian mysticism distinguishes between meditation, what you can do on your own through spiritual practice, and contemplation, which comes solely as gift. Teresa uses a garden metaphor. Your soul is a garden with the divine dwelling at its center, filled with flowers representing virtues. Your task is providing water through prayer, loving attentiveness. She describes four ways of watering, representing four degrees of prayer. First is hauling water from a well, meditation, requiring great labor. Second is using a water wheel, the prayer of quiet, the beginning of contemplation. Third is letting a nearby stream do the work. Fourth is rain, the prayer of union, requiring no effort, where virtues bear fruit. The shift from meditation to contemplation feels confusing and unpleasant. Teresa describes it as dryness, dislike, and distaste, an early dark night experience. Practices that once brought delight become barren. Increased effort brings no satisfaction. Yet this isn't spiritual failure. It's accompanied by genuine concern about serving God properly. What's happening is preparation for relating differently, based not on your effort, but on receptive willingness, not on doing, but on being. John of the Cross outlines three signs to differentiate authentic dark night experience from sin, depression, or laziness. First, profound dryness pervades both prayer and daily life. Previously rewarding practices become empty despite sincere attempts. Second, you discover a peculiar lack of desire for old ways, accompanied by genuine concern about serving God properly. Third, and most certain, is a simple desire to remain in loving attentiveness, characterized by inward peace without particular understanding or usual meditation exercises. John identifies three spirits visiting during this night: The spirit of blasphemy emerges when consolations evaporate, leading to disturbing outcries like, "Why me?" The spirit of fornication represents desperate attempts to regain lost gratification. The third spirit afflicts those who believe they could resolve their situation through understanding, leading to endless analysis yielding no relief. These spirits work together to refine human faculties, preparing them for contemplation's exquisite gifts. The dawn brings muted light, still touched by night's mystery, an awakening to who you really are in relation to the divine. Most importantly, the dawn is an awakening in love, the sole purpose of the dark night. Three key developments emerge: growing freedom as desire liberates from attachment, the shift from self-determination to willingness to be led, and awakening to your essential union with God and creation. The dark night isn't a single event, but an ongoing spiritual process. You have intermittent experiences of dawn, discovering transformed qualities of faith, hope, and love that bring profound reassurance. We typically think of God as the supreme being, separate and capable of giving good and bad things, but contemplatives emphasize divine immanence, God as your center, closer to you than you are to yourself. You're immersed in the divine and the divine in you. If God is love, that love tempers omnipotence, transforming power into intimate experience, not power over others, but the experience of being wounded for and with them. This vision transforms prayer into keeping God company in whatever God experiences. In a world obsessed with control and understanding, the dark night offers a different path, one of surrender, mystery, and trust. You cannot manufacture this transformation. All you have is your desire, which is simultaneously your prayer, your yes, and your hope. The darkness isn't abandonment. It's the most intimate embrace, stripping away everything false so that what remains is pure love.